Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here to have another conversation I'm hoping helps your business grow. We talk about a lot of stuff here on the show, and what we don't talk about enough is rock and roll and our band startups, because if you've listened to the show long enough, you know that I certainly think that they do. I even participated as a co-author in a book that will help support that theory. And that's who's bringing us today's episode of Startup Hustle. So today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by The Realist Guide to a Successful Music Career, written by Joel Cummins and myself, Matt DeCourcy. That's also who I've got in studio as a guest today. And we're going to talk all about that and the many, many changes in the live music scene. So let's just jump right in. Joel, welcome back to Startup Hustle.
Matt, it is great to be back here in beautiful Kansas City, Kansas. We've got a lovely fall day. I'm looking at the nice trees outside. So I'm just happy that you finally have an office with a window.
Yeah. It's really funny because that really was one of our goals. The last time you were on the show, you came to our other studio that was like a bunker in a basement. So yeah, we're moving up, man. We're moving up. Now the view that we have from our window, it's exactly okay. And I'm all right with that. And didn't you actually have an album once called Local Band Does Okay?
We did. We had that album was one of our, I think it was our third one that we really put out, but has some Humphreys McGee tracks that people seem to really love. So, and for those of you who don't know who I am, I play keyboards and Humphreys McGee, as Matt mentioned, I've written a book with him. That pretty much is the extent of my expertise. Everything else, I'm really just going for it, you know? Yeah, we were here a couple of years ago, I think right around when the book came out. Is that
a little secret? After?
A little after,
yeah.
So, a lot has changed in the music industry. A lot of things are still the same, and a lot is, kind of in between those worlds of getting back to normal and still figuring out, you know, how are we going to put on live music concerts with a pandemic that's still happening.
I think you guys were here 2 years ago in the pandemic in October. 2 years ago, and the pandemic came a few months later and threw everything into turmoil. And, let's talk about that for a second, because, for you and I, I don't like to say we're old, but we're experienced. And, we've seen a lot. I've seen so many different cycles of the music industry. And for those of you listening, before I was an entrepreneur, I used to work for Roland, and Roland's the world's largest maker of electronic musical instruments. So I was... Wow. As the Roland sign falls over in the studio. Wow.
That is mysterious stuff.
And that really was the sound of a Roland sign falling over in the studio. We couldn't have scheduled that any better. Oh my gosh. Is that like an omen? That's weird.
I think we're going to go viral.
Maybe. Unfortunately, none of the cameras I have pointed at has caught that, so you'll have to take my word for it. But
it's like the hole in one in golf when you're playing by yourself.
Yeah,
that
true.
Really happen.
I've had so many hole in ones as a golfer that no one saw. And you know, a funny fact, do you know that my wife, Jill, had hit a hole in one once and didn't tell me about it or mention it till we had been together for 4 years. And after she told me that, I was like, who are you? Like, what else are you hiding?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's a big hide. That's for sure.
Okay. There's no way we could ever reproduce what happened there. That was weird. Okay. So you talk about like different cycles in the music industry, and we've done different shows with music startups and stuff like that. And, you know, I mean, I grew up, I remember having like 8 tracks and 45 records, and we went through CDs, and all of a sudden that was the way to make music. And then it went back to live music. And right before the pandemic, it seemed like it was a really amazing time for touring acts to go out and make money on the road. And then it was gone.
Yeah, it was, things were going very well for us through the beginning of 2020. And we've kind of been on a very slow growth chart. We've been a band for 24 years. We have a ton of albums and lots of live recordings out there. So, you know, we built up fan bases around most cities in the United States over that time, and even do a couple international events. We've got one in Iceland coming up. We've got one in Mexico coming up. So we've done quite a bit of stuff, but we've relied on live touring for almost every, you know, channel of income that we could find, from merchandising to, you know, VIP events, things like that. This is where we are supporting ourselves. And so for that to disappear suddenly is obviously a really bad thing. And we individually, I think, kind of tried to make some moves to keep the fan base engaged. And, you know, we did play quite a few live streams in the beginning of it when everything was shut down for people that were stuck at home, just to give them some entertainment. Individually, a couple of us in the band did some solo stuff from our homes. You know, I did stuff with piano and synthesizers, all kinds of various stuff. Brennan was doing, playing songs on guitar and playing some piano and singing. His wife Annie was singing too. Like, it was kind of a cool little thing. It was called Why Not. These are all on YouTube. Mine were, I did some on Wednesdays, and I did like Live from the Living Room, I think we called that. I did some on some Friday nights, but I probably did about 35 or 40 free live public streams during that time. And we took some donations, and that ended up being a really important source of income for our family during that time. And, you know, kind of just allowed me to remain focused on music, which was really important, and just kind of trying to stay sane. You know, it was, I think, mentally a very taxing time for a lot of us. And that the results of that are still kind of bubbling up. We're still feeling these things, and, you know, the anxiety or the frustration, you know, that could happen from anybody who's doing a business that suddenly had this, you know, huge jolt thrown into and everything stopped. So it was a lot of adjustment, and, you know, now we're kind of back out and playing concerts again, and just kind of doing everything we can to play. We want to play music. We want it to be safe for our fans though too. So, you know, it's been a tricky time to figure out, wherever we go, what are going to be the things that we can do, and what are going to be the things we can, you know, to try to help fans feel safe coming and, you know, experiencing live music indoors again. I understand that's a challenge, you know, and I think it's made me a little nervous too, but we're out here trying it.
You mentioned the anxiety, and, you know, we've talked about that a lot on the show. There's a term called founder's depression that is often thrown around in the startup community, because as a founder or a business owner, you're thrust into a different role. Like, basically, when things are going well, if you're a good leader and founder, then you find a way to make it everyone else's success and not necessarily yours. And then when things are bad, you have to find a way to hold it all up on your shoulders. And for me, through the pandemic, and I mentioned on the way over here, you know, 220 employees worldwide and families, and that created a lot of anxiety for me, was just wanting to hold on. And I lost a significant amount of money doing it, but bounced back. When you say anxiety, was that more so from like not being able to have the creative release or play shows, or was it more so of just like not knowing when it might end or something different?
Oh, I think it was absolutely both of those things. My wife works in the music business as well, and we have sustained a very busy schedule traveling, working. You know, I've wanted to play as much as I can, and it's something that we've loved and something that gives us joy. So the absolute shock of feeling like we're going to be home for an indefinite amount of time was really strange and devastating and upsetting. And, you know, when you didn't have a choice about what you were going to get to do after doing this for so long. Yeah. And then the performance part of it, and just it was such a longing for hanging out with my friends and getting to play music with them. And, you know, like my brain went there. I was like, wow, there is a chance we're never going to play together again. Something is going to happen that's going to prevent us from, like, we played our last show. You know, that thought crossed my mind. And that was incredibly upsetting, right? But I had to acknowledge that as a possible reality and be prepared to do something else, right? Fortunately, that wasn't the case. And we had a three-month period where we didn't see each other as a band because we live all over the country. I live in Los Angeles. A couple guys live in Chicago, Nashville, Charleston, South Carolina. So we're all over, right? And it was just such a, you know, I saw other bands too that were getting together and playing. And it was like heart-wrenching for me. I love these guys and we love playing and making music together. And it's been something that we've done, you know, we've played over 2,500 concerts together. And so to have that ripped away emotionally was really hard. Like I shed tears about it, you know, it was like that's never happened before. I mean, I guess we've also never taken that large of a break, right? So to have that forced on us and then, you know, just a, you know, little silver lining to it. When we finally did get back together, we got to go to our guitarist Jake Senninger's studio in Niles, Michigan, a place where we've created music for years. And it was such a special and moving thing to just be in the same room together again. So there's certainly a greater level of appreciation for what we're doing. And I was talking about this with Jake today. There's a greater appreciation for the first note of a concert when it happens, how much went into getting to that point. Like there were so many things that needed to happen and to go well for the show to actually start. And so, you know, there definitely wasn't an appreciation for that before. You know, we were running like a well-oiled machine, which in a way is a good thing, right? But I think there's a little extra meaning and a little, and I think this goes for the musicians as well as for the fans who are coming to the shows. It means a little more now.
Yeah, so I was able to see you. I've been in the habit of seeing you guys play live once to three or four times a year for close to 15 years now, and got a chance to bring my daughter to Red Rocks for your show the day before my birthday. And that was her first like big concert experience. Yes, I was in the second row center with a 6.5 year old at your show, but I felt emotional just because was like, and music has been such a big part of my life as a listener and just any of it. And it felt like it had been ripped away. And I've seen so many comments from your followers and fans that say the same thing, you know, like they're, hey, if getting to go to my first show and forever and God, I needed this. I wanted it. Like, where was it? And you know, I went the final year before the pandemic, you know, here in Kansas City, went to about 80. I went from going to 80 to 85 events a year locally to none. And I was like, wow, where, like the silence was deafening in some regards. And it was, and I imagine that felt the same for you. So did you have another comment?
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say that's definitely something that I thought about quite a bit. And in particular, something that was missing from a lot of our lives was these random interactions that sometimes can like bring joy to your day or something that would you know, be a part of your career or part of, you know, what you're doing. And we were all missing these random things that would happen that would kind of help add meaning to our day. I think that was something I realized that was really, really tough as we were going.
So
that was my comment.
So as a band, so much, and for those of you that aren't familiar with Joel's band, Umphreys McGee, you can go to umphreys.com and learn more about them. It's progressive rock, which jam, as many people call it. And I think it's the hardest kind of music to play because it doesn't have a owner's manual. It's not like we're playing this note on the at 3 minutes and 14 seconds and don't play any other note other than that. Did you have a difficult time getting back into that, or did 24 years and a little, did you shake that off and just kind of jump back in?
Well, first off, I want to say there's far more complicated music than what we're playing, although we have been known to do things that are complicated for complicated sake. So, I was nervous about that. I was really nervous about going 3 months and we had one day to play together and then we were going to live stream. And as it turns out, it felt like it could have been, you know, 3 days since we played. It was kind of a crazy feeling. I was really nervous that, you know, and I've been playing a lot of the Umphreys tunes. I mean, probably 50 of the originals of the catalog. I just started playing on the live streams, you know, things that Brennan or Jake would sing and just try, you know, the ones that I could pull off by myself, trying to play some of those just to give myself a little challenge, you know, but it was easier than I thought it was going to be. And we played better than I thought we were going to play. And I think a lot of that is just the result of us. It's like total reps. We have played together now for so long. We've played so many shows and we've had so many rehearsals and so many sound checks. And, you know, we all know what it feels like. So to get back on that horse was probably easier for us than for a lot of people. I think it was, you know, it's just like, it's baked in our DNA at this point, how to play together as Umphreys McGee.
Well, that's good. That's a functional team in that regard. Yeah. Let's talk, you mentioned something about practice and, you know, over the last 5 or 6 years, you were first interviewed in my book, Balance Me. And we were talking about just life balance and different stuff. And at that same time, I gained this fascination for figuring out how high performers perform the way that they do. And actually, your bandmate, Jake Senninger, is someone I've had conversations with this about. Jake's world class all day. And the thing is he'll tell you the same thing. It's reps, it's practice. I might have some talent, but it's nothing if I don't grind down to it. So did you practice and put in a lot of reps, like while you had a year and a half to do it?
I probably played the acoustic piano more than I've ever played in a year and a half period. So yeah, I did. It worked out. That part was great. And you know, my wife and I have a 3-year-old daughter now and an 8-month-old little boy who wasn't around yet at that point for the pandemic. But so the home life became family time and let me get back there on my instrument and play as much as I can. So I learned some pretty tough classical pieces that I've always wanted to pick up. Some Claude Debussy stuff that was really challenging, Hommage à Rameau. Mouvement, which is the two pieces of the Image Series 2, I think. But those were really fun. Those were challenging. I did a Chopin piece. It's his famous Etude in E major. And, you know, I won't say I got that to the level of like professionalism, but I spent a few months on it trying to figure it out. Couple Beethoven pieces that I've always wanted to really really sharpen up. So it was cool. I did a lot of classical stuff. I picked up some other jazz tunes that I was working on. I did a bunch of writing, mostly in the context of stuff for the new Umphreys McGee album that's coming out. Did a bunch of recording, got it set up so I can record from my house, which is pretty amazing. You know, obviously a lot of people have home studios, but mine is in about an 8 by 10 foot room. So it's very tight in there and we got it set up so I could, you know, I could get some stuff done. So yeah, I did try to take advantage of that. And I feel like being home, I got it. You know, another thing I should mention, and this goes back to balance me, I feel like I got into a very healthy routine at home, which I'd never really had because I was always traveling so much. So this gave me the opportunity to, you know, now that I'm a dad, I get up early in the morning and, you know, I learned how to, I can be an asshole barista now. So I can make some lattes, cappuccinos, you know, espressos. Sorry, this is now rated PG-13.
It's okay. Yeah. We mark all episodes explicit.
Explicit.
Yeah.
Okay, good, good. That won't be the last then.
But what's the Chappelle show that used to be on DVD? And it's like, if you ever passed out with that on, you got to listen to Better Not Bring Your Kids, like over and over and over. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm saying that because a friend told me about that. I've never actually, you know, passed out on my couch with that on. And another person. Can you actually like make the little leaf and the, can you do drawings with the foam as a barista?
Oh, yes.
Wait, yes, what are you talking about?
I can. You know, they're mostly hearts because I'm making drinks for my wife. So,
true.
You know, a lot of hearts. I do need to figure out, you know, maybe like the little Nirvana, like the X's with the eyes and the smiley face and the cigarette. That'd be a good one.
So if you can actually do that with foam or really anything, I'd love for you to send that picture in to us at Startup Hustle. I'm challenging the listeners as well. There's someone out there that can do it.
I get home on Monday. I'll do it Tuesday morning.
I'm looking forward to that. We're going to turn that into an NFT, and that will be how you make, that's how you really will become wealthy, Joel. Congratulations. Okay. So once again, with me today, I've got Joel Cummins. Joel is one of the co-founders and the keyboardist in Umphreys McGee. Go to umphreys.com to learn more about what they're doing and check out a show with the band when they come
we're
through
back
your town.
On tour.
Yeah, yeah, back at it. Yeah.
Put out a bunch of new tour dates too. So we're hitting a ton of places on the East Coast, the Midwest. When is this coming out?
Soon. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you probably missed November tour then. Sorry, guys.
Part of it. Yeah.
But you can come to Miami Beach for New Year's.
Yeah, and that's always that's a good time. Yeah. That was those have been some of my favorite shows that I've never been in a room that dropped 10,000 balloons on people. That was fun. Yeah,
you're welcome.
That was fun.
So to just wrap up that final thought back there, the routine thing. So I got in the habit of, you know, waking up, making myself an espresso, go outside, probably an average of 45 minutes of yoga outside in the morning, which I live in Santa Monica, California. So most days are pretty amenable to that. And then, you know, maybe play a little music, like whatever. Not trying to make any judgments. Sometimes I'll write something then, like come up with a little riff and write it down. Sometimes, I'm just going to play. You know, I love playing over the Miles Davis tune, Flamenco Sketches. So that's one of my favorites to just sit down and work on, you know, I'm playing in different keys. I get to solo, be a little creative. But that morning time for playing is like non-judgment time. So yeah, then I do the yoga, then I go get my daughter up and, you know, feed her breakfast. And then it's about like serving others for a while. And then in the afternoon, after I put her down for a nap, then it's music time again. Then I go back and play a little more, do some teaching if that's what's happening. I picked up about 10 or 11 students, I would say, that were regular students over the pandemic. And I'm still teaching a few of them now, but just not quite as regularly. But, you know, making sure I have time in the day for all the things that were important to me. And it's amazing how quickly home life filled up. And I'm like, wow, don't have any more to, like, I'm eating dinner and, like, maybe hang out for another half hour, an hour, and I'm ready to go to bed at like 10 o'clock, you know, which is not very rock and roll. That's not when I'm going to bed when we're out touring.
I think rock and roll is whatever you decide you want it to be. Isn't that the whole premise of it? And maybe we wrote our book like a year and a half too early. Cause I thought about some of that while I was in quarantine at home. You know, you mentioned like getting back out on stage, and that's something I'm going to get to experience soon with going back to the Philippines. And my very last trip there was I left on the last day that you could leave. I almost got stuck there. And I don't even know if you remember that. Maybe
you
do.
You told me about that. I mean, those last couple of days were crazy, and the scenes at the airports were giving me there's another example of giving me anxiety, being like, oh my God.
Oh, dude, I was calling home and telling my family, I'm like, this is going to get really real. And, you know, like on that side of the world, they were a couple weeks ahead of it. And, you know, another thing too is the parts of Asia, they've had the bird flu and a bunch of other different things and SARS and stuff like that. And they seemed a lot more equipped to handle it. And we got a different dose of it. So one other thing I wanted to remind everyone, Joel and I wrote a book. And it's called The Realist Guide to a Successful Music Career. You can buy it on Amazon, and it's available in the Audible store and on any format, pretty much that Amazon provides at this point.
Yep,
so we're also going to sign hundreds of copies of that today, and we're not even sure how we're going to distribute those yet. Maybe on freeze.com. I don't know.
We'll see. Yeah. The world is our oyster for distribution.
Yeah, true.
So the book also features, I mean, you know, Matt is a big star here on the Startup Hustle, so we know that. But, you know, some great musicians and people in the music business, Huey Lewis, Susan Tedeschi, Taylor Hicks, Victor Wooten, Ivan Neville.
Jeff Coffin,
yeah. So we tried to talk to a lot of people in the music business, Pete Shapiro, who is, you know, a great promoter, trying to get some different angles of, you know, what people's experiences in the music business are, because there are really a lot of different ways to succeed in doing what you're doing. And I think that there are also a lot of mistakes that many of us make. And, you know, there's so many ways that you can go wrong. It's really valuable to see examples of, you know, people making good decisions or bad decisions that take them, you know, one of two ways. But it's really for anybody. You know, if you are just somebody at home that is playing for fun, you're going to find some info there. If you want to, you know, start recording yourself or, you know, putting stuff online, or if you're somebody who wants to do it more seriously for a career, I think there's a lot of helpful and useful info about.
It's not just for performing artists. Like you alluded to that a little bit. You know, the music industry is much like an iceberg. Like Joel, you're in the tip of the iceberg, and that's the part that people see on musicians on stage. And you know, 95% of the music industry is subsurface in that regard. Like I mentioned, having worked for Roland, like, and that was a great job in the music industry. It's because I have no talent as a musician, but I have a love for the products that they make and the output and the joy that they create.
It's great that you recognize that early on.
That I have no talent as a musician. Right. Well, you know, it's funny because I saw Jake play guitar and then I quit. I was like, okay, so if that's what you need to do, then I'm gonna go back to being a salesperson or doing something different. But you know, you can have a career and work in the music industry, and I'm seeing that. Like we've had past guests. We had Matt Ford, who's the founder of Prism.fm, which is a touring assistance platform for artists, much like Humphreys McGee. And we've had all different kinds of different startups on the show. And, you know, so are bands startups?
I would say yes. I'd say in most cases, yes. Because you don't really think of a band as a corporate thing, right? And all of these little, you know, bands. And I mean, you could make the argument for any sort of, you know, music creator, DJ, producer, you know, these people's brands are in some cases also startups, right? I think that description makes sense. But looking at the larger picture, there are so many, if you love music and you want to have a career that's involved in music, there are so many different angles that you can look at from, you know, working with an individual artist, working with a label, working at a venue, working for festivals. You know, there are lots of different avenues where, you know, you can have a career that's rewarding and, you know, feel like you're being somewhat helpful. And you know, I don't know. I think that's the thing. It's like, there are a lot of people who love music out there, but we can't have them all be musicians. We need some people to be fans. We need some people to be staff. We need some people to be working security. And if you like music, there are all these positions that you can do that I think would be a great living.
So we've come up with a pretty simple definition for what a startup is over the last 700 episodes. It's a business venture that doesn't come with an owner's manual. And, you know, so if you open a franchise, that comes with an owner's manual and a support line.
Right.
Pretty much anything you do entrepreneurial where you have to carve your own path, it doesn't mean it has to, like, you're not the first band to ever be a band or play a concert. That doesn't mean you're not a startup because you got to figure it all out. And you know, and with that role, I mean, here's the thing, you know, shit flows downhill and uphill for the founder. And you got to figure it out, and you learn a lot about yourself as a business owner. What's something you've learned about yourself as a business owner?
Well, before I answer that question, I want to say something else, because I think this was something I was just thinking back to. I was going to mention this earlier. What was something that was really valuable for us that helped us carry through the pandemic time, right, when we weren't working? And a couple of years ago, we hired this company, Catalano Catbour, to be our accountants and to help us with our finances. And that relationship turned out to probably be the most important one of the past year that we had established. Having somebody who knew what they were doing and was going to be willing to go through and put the hours in to help guide us into what the most, the best use of, you know, how we were going to proceed forward and make sure that the business doesn't go bankrupt. Right. And so I think that decision and having those guys in our corner just gave me, if there was one thing that I was not anxious about, it was that. And we ended up making it through, you know, we didn't play in front of people again. We did 4 drive-in shows in 2020, I think. So we had a little bit of income from that, but I mean, nothing like a normal touring year. Right. And by April of 2021, we were back playing concerts in front of people again. So the fact that they were able to kind of help us get there and also figure out what to do with our crew, you know, we all ended up having to go on unemployment for, I think like 8 to 10 months, you know, maybe a little longer. And that was, you know, it's like, I would have had no idea what to do, you know, all these years. All the things that we've worked on doing as a band, this had nothing to do with it, right? And suddenly it was, you know, we had to make some decisions as a business or we were going to be in a lot of debt. So for me, I think that's a really important thing to take away. If you are having some success and with your startup, whatever that might be, you really need to have somebody who knows what they're doing with money to help you make sure that you are putting things in the right places and taking care of people in the right way and also not putting yourself at a disadvantage.
And we talk about that in the book. You mentioned there's so many of the topics of conversation on Startup Hustle have been centric around failure, not about success. Because once someone succeeds at something, sometimes it's hard to duplicate, meaning like someone's done it. It's not really that easy. So it's, you can't be like, hey, look, I did this and I got really, and I made a shitload of money doing it. And you're like, okay, well, you've done it. And now it's kind of ruined for everyone else. Meaning like, it's not, you're not the only one. And so you learn a lot more from failure both as an entrepreneur and just someone that wants to be one. And, and the majority of feedback that we've gotten from listeners, and thank you for so many, people have listened to this show in 190 countries. Like, thank you.
You're welcome. It's mostly due to me.
Was it you traveling? Yeah. So 130 of those were you. And can you, I'm going to give you a short list of places I need you to visit.
I put Startup Hustle.
So we can get them all.
I put Startup Hustle stickers everywhere.
I like that. And that's also why I've been getting letters from local governments and stuff. I'm going to need you to figure out how to do a show in North Korea, because we're struggling to figure out how we're going to put a check mark next to that one.
Does it really have to be me, Matt? I mean,
well, you said you were the one traveling. You're apparently the brand ambassador and out there. By the way, our our plan for that is
to get Dennis Rodman on the horn.
Do you remember the Zune player and its colossal failure as an MP3 product for Microsoft? We think we can get a good deal on those, and we're gonna load them up with the whole Startup Hustle library and then fly them in via helium balloon. Yeah.
What a great plan.
Yeah. We're working on it, man. We're here to help solve the really important problems. And that's actually what I want to kind of spend the last segment of our show talking about. And, you know, if you're a regular listener, you know, we talk a lot about the fact that a business has a good business and a great business has to solve a problem. And I'm curious about what the problems are in the music industry that need to be solved, because there's people listening to the show that are looking for something, looking for a solution to try to work on. What do you think some of the things that what are the difficulties both for touring artists or musicians it could be recording. I don't know. I mean, is there something that stands out?
You know, it's a good question. I think the hardest thing for any musician is to get someone through the door the first time, to come experience something. Because it costs, people are going to have to pay money, you know? And, that to me, I mean, it's specific to Humphreys McGee, I think that's always been a challenge of how do we find new people that might be interested in our band? Because I'm sure there are, you know, at least a few thousand people out there that if they knew about Humphreys McGee, they would be into it. How do you find them? You know? A lot of the playlist sort of options on, you know, music media these days, I think helps connect people. If you're interested in a certain genre of music, you know, get recommendations, or, you know, a playlist is created based on this song or based on this artist, right? So that is helping. I think it's probably easier to discover music now than it ever has been.
For sure.
But it's still, I think one of the biggest uphill battles is just how do you even get someone to know that you're playing in town or that, you know, this is happening. Obviously, acts that are really popular, they have a marketing machine behind them. And, you know, you'll see billboards and there'll be ads on the radio. There'll be ads that pop up on people's phones when they're looking at something, right? But to me, that is, for someone that's coming up, I think that is the greatest hurdle. It's just, how do I get people through the door? How do I get people to know about what I'm doing? So I think that is that's a constant problem that's going to continue, you know, for every artist individually that they need to solve. So, you know, you've just got to find ways to connect with people. And, you know, and then the second hardest thing is getting someone to come back again and see you live after they've come the first time. Did you make it interesting enough that someone's going to say, I can't miss that when it comes back? And then after the second time, you know, do something different enough that they say the same thing. I got to come back the third time, you know? Making fans is really hard. That is the single most, you know, I think the single biggest challenge to it. So for a band like Humphreys McGee, we're trying to do, you know, cool, challenging, exploratory rock and roll that has some improvisation with it. But we're also trying to have a, you know, just a good time for people to come and have fun with their friends and or forget about whatever else is going on in their lives, you know? So I think it's important, you know, that's the main service that we deliver. We want to give people a fun night out where maybe they'll be challenged a little bit by music, but for the most part, it's a good time. It's fun. And it's, you know, it's something that's interactive and something that a lot of us have missed. I think that's one thing that it feels like it really should be a boon for the music business in the end, is that taking that away from all of us, the performers and the audience and, you know, all the people staffing all these things, really hurt a lot of us, because this is something that is deep in our souls and it's an emotional experience to go to a concert and feel moved by the music and feel like, you know, it's bringing you this new energy or perspective that you can then go out in the world and, you know, do whatever it is you need to do. So I think a lot of that lost inspiration that we saw over the pandemic is coming to fruition now. And I really think that that's something that, you know, once we're a little more through the pandemic, that it's going to have such a positive effect on society and the world.
You know, there was something that you said to me a few years ago, and that was very incongruous with what you were just talking about. It was related to tribe building. And you actually recommended that I read Seth Godin's book about called Tribes. I took that to heart and really worked on building a tribe. I think that has a lot to do with the startup hustle growth. We have if you want to go to Startup Hustle Chat on Facebook, we're in there with about 2,500 different entrepreneurs that are interested in helping each other. And, you know, I think that when I look back at some of the principles related to music and compared to the podcast, one of the things that you mentioned that was really powerful and really stuck with me, and I've talked about this in different episodes of this show, was you have to be selfless with your tribe building and try to create a world and community where the people in the tribe find as much value in the interaction with each other as they do with you. I thought that was amazing and a really good advice. And if you talk about like building, you want to build fans, followers, you really want to have evangelists that shout about you from the mountaintops. And the way to do that is to encourage that vibe. And what you said, one other thing with that, that stuck, you said, you can't get mad when they don't always say great stuff about you.
Yeah.
Like, because you know, if it's their take on what you provided to them, like maybe, I mean, some, hey, look, I put out a couple of videos recently about the trolls of the world. They exist. And you know what? Fuck them. I ain't got time for that. And you just kind of move on. But
yeah,
there's something to be understood and learned from those around you. I mean, like, is that, I just really, and I've seen you and the other members of Unfreeze McGee, and once again, go to unfreeze.com and learn more about Joel's band, but you guys have been great with that. I mean, back to you talk about getting people in the door the first time, I've referred to your approach as open source marketing, because you were encouraging people to come to shows, record them, and just distribute it everywhere.
Yeah.
And was genius. Because yeah, you mobilized a army of grassroots marketing that can be highly effective. Because if someone you know gives you, they're like, hey, listen to this, you're going to probably listen to
or you might be in the car with them and you're forced to listen to it. So
yeah, that's why most people that I know Unfreeze.
A lot of uncomfortable car rides. The tribe building thing I think is really important, because when you have people, you know, below you that are as invested and as interested in being a part of something that's bigger than them, it's, you know, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Because we all want that. We all are just looking for connections with each other, you know, human connections and different perspectives. And that sort of interaction is rewarding. So when you can kind of build and construct a startup or a band, whatever it is, with this concept of like, let's make something that is special and specific to us, it is a powerful thing for the people that experience it. And, you know, we take it a step further. We have an event called Humble, where we source our fans for what is it that they want to hear, from songs to, you know, improvisational ideas. Some of the stuff people will live text in what's going on.
Truly interactive concert.
Yeah,
that's super
exactly,
cool. That's super
exactly.
cool.
So we do that typically like once a year. And that's something where we're taking it even a step further. And it's like, wow, like a fan is going to go home and be like, I texted in this idea for an improvisation that was like Berlin 3 a.m. dance party. And they played it. And now there's this thing I can go back and listen to that's this 8-minute jam that I love, you know, and it came from my head. Like it's kind of a cool thing that I don't think too many other bands out there have done. So we've tried to, you know, come up with a few ideas that we feel like would be really special and specific to us. Another idea that we do at concerts, and we started this probably 10 years ago. This was one of Kevin Browning's ideas that we eventually were able to bring to life.
And who is Kevin?
Kevin Browning was our original sound engineer for Unfreeze McGee, and now co-manager. He's been co-managing since 2011 with Vince Iwinski, who's been our manager since the beginning. So Vince does most of the touring business, the day-to-day stuff on that end, and kind of general, like, overall big picture stuff. And Kevin is more of the, you know, the social media, the tech, finding other outside sources of revenue sort of thing. So he's kind of on that front. So we have a really great split of resources with two super passionate guys about our music that have been with us from the beginning. And, you know, that's worked out great. But Kevin came up with this idea that how cool would it be at a concert if you could wear headphones and get the mix of the front of house, so basically like a left-right mix, and have it isolated so you could hear everything. So we were a little nervous at first that that would create a weird vibe with people wearing headphones at a show next to people who aren't. But it turns out now that people know what it is, like, a lot of people, you know, they would share them with somebody who didn't know what it was, or like two people would get one set for the night and then they would go back and forth. But it gives you this, you know, you have a wireless pack on you, so you can just walk around and hear the mix in insane clarity, you know. And not that I encourage this, but, you know, you could go to the bathroom, could go get your friends a drink, you know, and still be able to hear the show. So it's kind of a fun little, you know, and especially people that are so into the music and they don't want to hear, you know, anybody talking behind them or something like that. It gives you this super high-end experience of the show. So we usually rent, like, you know, depending on the size of the show, 20 to 30 of those per night. And it's been a huge, cool thing, something that's very unique for our band.
And you guys used to be able to, now you have things like nugs.net where you can stream your shows, which I love. I live on that, man. Jill was like looking through our expenses. She's like, what is this nugs.net thing? Can I cancel this? It's like, if you want me to go crazy, cancel that. But that's been a great avenue to share music. But prior to that whole world, you could come to your shows and leave with the show on a CD at one point. I remember you guys had those big towers burning them. And so here's the point. As an entrepreneur, look for ways to look. These are all things that people, I just know, because I was one of them that loved that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. We used to be able to, like, 30 minutes after the show is over, you could walk out with CDs of it. And so now that's become, it's all digital. So nugs.net hosts all of our live concerts for audio. And, you know, usually within 24 hours of a show happening, that, you know, that show will be up there and you can re-listen to it. So it's pretty quick turnaround. Our live streaming, we've typically done with tour gigs. We've used a few different companies, but
you go to tourgigs.com.
Yep. Right? And
anywhere in the world you can watch Unfreeze live.
Yeah. And the other cool thing that you can do now is you can watch it live, and then it's also, after it happens, on demand, and you can rewatch it then. So it's a pretty cool thing to get, you know, and a lot of people, like you said, it's time zones all over the place. So maybe you're able to catch some of it live, but, you know, you couldn't watch all of it, or maybe, you know, you want to wake up the next morning and watch it. So it really gives the person who wants to watch it the freedom to do it on their schedule.
And pants are optional for viewers, right? Isn't that? Yeah. I think that's actually one of the marketing lines on there. So once again with me today, Joel Cummins, my co-author of The Realist Guide to a Successful Music Career.
You can find, by the way, great holiday gift.
It is.
Great holiday gift.
And it's not just for musicians. Like, I think that there's a lot of people that have a passion for music and don't realize all the cool stuff they can do in and around the music industry. And, you know, I've gotten feedback from people that read the book and loved it that aren't even considering a career in music. They found it to be wildly interesting how certain parts of the music industry work, and actually, like, even just the planning, like, just drop one thing that just popped in my head. It's like, okay, if you're going to tour in the South, you probably need to be careful where you book a show on Saturday night during SEC football season.
Yes, exactly.
Because if you want to look out at an empty venue in Birmingham, Alabama, it's probably on a Saturday night, the Crimson Tide
or something like exactly. that. Exactly.
And these are little things. This is the failure of entrepreneurship and the openness that I've come to realize that all great entrepreneurs share, because knowledge isn't for you to keep. It's meant to be transferred. It's very important and it's very powerful. And I think some of the most redeeming moments that I have just in general is sharing and transferring that knowledge. This is exactly what we do in the book. Joel, we're out of time because we got to go sign like 300 books.
All right. Which means we need you guys
to buy them.
To buy them.
Yeah. Buy them. Stop what you're all doing and buy. buy the book.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just get, now the thing is you can't buy the signed one on Amazon. So buy the one on Amazon and then email me or find us somewhere. I don't know.
But we will have these also on the Umphrey's McGee merch site. So you'll be able to get them from there.
And if you see photos of the Startup Hustle studio and our office, and you notice all the really cool concert posters that are strewn around, those are Umphrey's McGee concert posters. You can buy those at your site too. They're super cool.
You definitely can. And if you come to an Umphrey show, we'll likely have them at the merch table. So that's also a good place to pick them up.
True. I'm going to pick up a whole bunch of them tonight because I've got all of this wall space. What do you think of our new studio?
It's like I said, it's fantastic.
And
man.
It has a window.
Kansas City, Kansas is hopping. And I, in all sincerity, I really do appreciate Matt told me earlier, some of the work they're trying to do to get this little downtown area back to a bustling corridor. And we're already seeing things happen. And I think it's really cool that, Matt is a guy from Kansas City, Kansas here, and, is reinvesting, in the community and helping make a difference and take something and, you know, just make it a little bit better, leave it a little better than you found it.
A little better, Dave. Do a little better tomorrow or today than you did yesterday. That was kind of what the whole book Balance Me was about. Joel, we're going to go do some work now, and then I'm going to deliver you back to where I picked you up from so you can get in the right state of mind to rock and roll tonight. I'm looking forward to that.
Always a pleasure, Matt. We'll talk to you soon.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.